The Army is trending green. Assistant Secretary of the Army Catherine Hammack is leading the Army's charge toward more sustainable bases. The Army has some ambitious near-term goals for energy savings. Hammack talks to Federal News Radio Scott Massioni about where the Army is going green.
The Army's energy sustainability and security strategy is really about resiliency. Resilience being defined as the ability to perform and succeed under a variety of adverse conditions, which for the Army means helping people, communities, and our Army prepare for, withstand, and emerge stronger from shocks or stresses. So increasing installation resiliency is a priority that the Army is addressing, and our energy sustainability and security strategy is part of that. One of the disruptions or stresses that our installations see are climate-related disruptions. And we see those growing in frequency, intensity, and unpredictability. What this means is we then have increased humanitarian operations because there's, whether it's increased demand for defense support to civil authorities or handling those who are displaced due to environmental challenges. We see that in the floods and the overwhelming rainstorms in parts of the United States. We see that in tornadoes or hurricanes. So increased humanitarian operations inside of the United States. There's also those around the world overseas where we are seeing certainly a refugee crisis right now. And some of that drives resource competition, and that leads to insecurity. So climate-related disruptions increase the humanitarian operations for the Army, but they also increase our training constraints, where training lands could lose their ability to support current training types and frequency because the ground is too wet, or perhaps the ground is areas too dry and our operations could spark fires. We also have supply chain vulnerabilities where we might have interruptions to power or water. And resource competitions like that are really driving our resiliency strategy, which is our energy security and sustainability strategy.
And I think you said that your first goal of this strategy back in October was to explain the why of what you're doing so everyone can kind of get behind this and really know what they're working for in the implementation of it. How's the strategy been received in the, you know, 6 or 7 months since then?
The strategy has been very well received, and you're absolutely right. Resiliency is about the why. The military comprises 80% of the federal government's energy use, and with the Army using more than 20% of that total, we feel a special responsibility to improve our energy performance. But what's very interesting, I found, is the Department of Energy estimates that behavior change can reduce energy consumption by 3 to 10% a year. And for the Army, that would mean annual savings of $40 million to $100 million. And that can be used for critical mission needs. So our soldiers and units have begun to better understand the importance of resiliency and the contributions that they can make to a more resilient future and how it benefits them now and into the future.
And that actually kind of leads right into my next question, which is, how are you educating the Army on this strategy? How are you changing behavior and getting kind of the word out on this strategy?
Well, there's many different ways to get the word out, but one of the most interesting ways is through our renewable energy strategy, because a key to resiliency is the ability to produce energy closer to the point of need. In early June, we are cutting the ribbon on what is going to be the largest renewable energy field in the Department of Defense, and that's in Fort Benning, Georgia. And this is over 200 acres of solar panels. So you can see them from the ground, you can see them from the air, and that gives our soldiers a feeling of pride when they see that we are contributing to improving the environment, reducing our consumption of fossil fuels, and it helps them also understand how these contributions can make a more resilient future.
Now, do you have any kind of numbers or anything on what that may save or how that may be more efficient for the Army?
Well, right now, the Army has 14 major projects completed or under construction, and together they'll provide over 400 megawatts of generation capacity by the end of calendar year 2016. So we have estimated that they will generate over $250 million in cost avoidance over the life of the projects. But what makes it even more interesting is we're not spending taxpayer dollars to get these systems installed on Army installations. We are attracting private capital. We are attracting private business who is spending over $800 million to install, own, operate, and maintain these systems on Army installations. And we are simply buying the energy they produce at a lower cost.
We're here with Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment, Catherine Hammack. Ms. Hammack, I was just kind of wondering, you know, what kind of partnerships do you have with the private sector, and how are you expanding your collaboration with them and academia, too, when it comes to getting, you know, better technologies with renewable resources, helping install things on bases, you know, those kind of things?
Well, with the private sector, we are partnering on these renewable energy projects where the private sector comes in and they design, install, own, operate, and maintain the systems. We have also privatized some of our electrical distribution, natural gas distribution, water, and wastewater systems because that is the private sector's core competency. Running those kind of resources and utilities is their main business. And for the Army, our main business is training and equipping soldiers and defending this nation. So when we partner with the private sector, we bring their talent and expertise to some of the services that we need on our bases. We have also partnered with the private sector in our housing, where we have private sector companies that come in and design, construct, operate, and maintain housing for soldiers and their families. They're also maintaining some of our historic infrastructure, some of those great old officers' quarters that you see on the bases. And again, their core competency is owning, operating, and maintaining housing. And they're doing a great job of it and giving better quality housing for our soldiers and their families and Air Force, Marine, and other of the services that live on our bases. So we have found that partnering with the private sector really brings the best quality and talent to bear in serving the military.
And going along with that a little bit, you gave us an idea a little bit before about what you're doing now to create these projects on the bases. But can you give us an idea of what the renewable energy projects you'll have rolling out for the next year, the next 5 years might be?
Well, one of the most interesting I find is a project that we have in Hawaii. And if you look at the island of Oahu, all of their power generation is on the shoreline in the tsunami zone. So if there were a tsunami that hit the island of Oahu, there would not be any power generated to support that island. So in partnership with Hawaiian Electric Company, we are offering land to them on one of our higher altitude installations. It's only 800 feet above sea level, but in Hawaii, that's a lot. And they are putting in a biodiesel power plant, a 50-megawatt plant that is going to run an airfield, an army base, and a community hospital. So that has the ability to help restart emergency services and help restart power for the entire island in case of emergency. So we're really looking for ways that we can become more resilient in serving this nation and ways we can partner with the private sector to help ensure resiliency in those communities surrounding our bases as well.
The Army, along with the other military services, says it lacks enough funding to properly maintain its bases and other infrastructure. Assistant Army Secretary Catherine Hammack says the Army is trying to get to the bases with the most needs first. She's also pushing for another round of base realignment and closure to help the Army bring in some much-needed savings. Federal News Radio Scott Massioni talks with Hammack about the Army's infrastructure problem.
the Army has made a decision to take risk in our installation facilities and services to maximize funding for training operations and readiness. And so this forces us to prioritize only the most critical projects and prudence and programs and work to be prudent with our investments. And so we are approaching increasing requirements with decreasing resources, and we have to ensure that we are able to support the soldiers and missions, because facilities directly impact readiness. Deteriorated facilities are more likely to fail, and that can compromise the mission. And inadequate or deteriorated facilities impair readiness and lower the quality of life for our soldiers and their families, reduce the efficiency of our workers, and also detract from the retention of highly motivated and qualified personnel. So we need Congress to authorize a base realignment and closure, because BRAC is about readiness. We have calculated that we spend approximately $500 million every year on excess or underutilized infrastructure in the Army. And our current estimate is that 21% of the current inventory of facilities are excess. So what we are asking Congress for is the authority to consolidate into our highest military value bases and facilities and divest of underutilized facilities, because we can't carry excess infrastructure at costing over $500 million a year indefinitely. You know, that amount of money in savings would represent the annual personnel cost of about 5,000 soldiers. So that is important to us, to ensure that we can continue to support this Army. You know, one thing I'll tell you is that the local communities surrounding our installations are already seeing fewer soldiers and families as our force structure continues to decline. What BRAC does is allows the Army to use a fair and a nonpartisan process to close a few lower military value locations and realign the remaining missions. So I think our communities understand the benefits of a BRAC, because many communities have made great use of the facilities that we have moved out of, turning them into universities or industrial manufacturing parks. But the challenge is, without a BRAC, as the Army draws down, the negative impacts of underutilized installations will affect our communities with failing infrastructure and unused land not generating the potential benefits of use.
Now, a lot of the costs that come from these bases that are these XX bases, at least, is that coming mostly from the infrastructure itself, or does it come a lot from the personnel that has to man these kind of ghost infrastructures almost?
I would say all of the above, because as we try to become more efficient and move out of a building that's half full so that we have buildings that are 100% utilized, you know, those buildings start to decay, and we can shut them down and save a little bit on the energy that would have been consumed by that building. But our biggest savings are when we close an entire base and we do not have to man the gates or have responsibility for taking care of the roads or the other infrastructure requirements. So consolidation does have a personnel impact, but I will tell you that I have been to bases that have been consolidated out of, and one that I was just up at in Massachusetts, they now have a pharmaceutical manufacturing plant there. They have a movie studio there. They have turned the base operating area into hotels and restaurants. And what they have told me is that there are now more people employed in that area than there were when it was an Army base. So it can benefit the community with more jobs, with tax-paying revenue from the property taxes that come from the land. And so there is a future for communities where an Army base has closed. But we are estimating that a Department of Defense-wide BRAC would cost about $6 billion over a six-year implementation period. But it would produce a return of on investment for the entire Department of Defense of about $2 billion a year in reoccurring savings. So as our budgets are shrunk, that is $2 billion that we really can't afford to continue to support in these underutilized facilities.
Right, right. Now, your service, the Army, and also all of the other services and the DoD installation side of things are all saying that they have, you know, huge maintenance backlogs, that they have a lot of areas that need to be upgraded or modernized. Where do you prioritize when it comes to those things, and where do you see the most need?
Well, I hate to say we prioritize the worst first, but that's really the way it is. When you have limited funding, what we put together is a prioritized list of failing facilities that have to be replaced. For an instance, a wastewater treatment plant would go pretty high on the list, because if you have a wastewater treatment plant that's failing, usually failing means that you have unwarranted discharges into a local waterway. And no one wants that waterway to be polluted, and you run the risk of the EPA shutting you down. So replacing that wastewater treatment plant would be very high on the list. We prioritize taking care of where soldiers live. And so maintaining our barracks is a high priority, because we want our soldiers to be able to rest and relax before they're stressed by the next mission we ask them to undertake. But it also means that there are roads with potholes, there are water mains that break, it means there are offices that might be in failing condition. I was in one building where the roof has failed, and it's structurally impossible to replace, but it's a three-story building, so they're still holding classrooms on the first floor. We have failing infrastructure throughout the Army, and what we want to do is consolidate so we don't have to maintain it, and we can afford to maintain the infrastructure we need versus the infrastructure that's left over from World War II.
Now, when it comes to these failing buildings, if there was kind of an ideal world where you were able to finally catch up on all these problems, you know, maybe BRAC was implemented and you could catch up on the backlog, what sort of things do you think you could prioritize that could really help the Army and push it toward a better future?
Well, net zero is our strategy. So what we are looking for is a net zero base where we make as much energy on base as we use over the course of the year, where we utilize the same amount of water that we take from an aquifer and we inject it back in after we've finished using it, so that the aquifer remains in a net zero state. We're not depleting it. And net zero waste, so that we're not utilizing training land for landfills. We're able to keep them as training, and we have all of our waste being recycled. That is our long-term strategy of ensuring that we're able to operate in a stable way without an adverse impact on the environment around us or the communities around us, and that will make us a better citizen and partner with this nation. But it's a strategy that we also take when we deploy in contingency bases, because we want to be able to go in and then return and shut down a site, leaving as little a footprint as possible.
Catherine Hammack is Assistant Secretary of the Army, speaking with Federal News Radio Scott Mossioni. Find the entire interview at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.